are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What is happening, and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode 4, Tuesday, November 26th, and that is one win. Go beat Charlotte twice this week, and that is called a winning streak. It has happened before. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press. Pistons fan and follower my whole life, just like you guys, in a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Thankful for all you guys on this Thanksgiving week. Was just running through some of the numbers, some of the income, all that good stuff. Very thankful to be able to do what I do on a, I guess, full-time basis when you add everything up. The numbers for the downloads are big. Right now, already, with still a few more days of November left, we're the fourth highest month of all time for Locked On Pistons downloads. Need you to spread the word to all your friends and family to get that up to a realistic shot of being maybe even the second highest month of all time when all is said and done at the end of this week. Just don't talk to your family at Thanksgiving. Just go back and download like all the old episodes of Locked On Pistons. That's what we need you to do. Hey, maybe we'll do a listener contest. The new listeners, I know you can get in your queue. Just go back and download all the old ones, and then you can, I don't know, erase them. I don't know. Let's play with these numbers. Let's manipulate things and have some fun here. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at Matt underscore Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore for that. Also, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook. Today we're going to run down the details from a victory, a fun Victory Tuesday here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. I'm going to give you my three biggest things from the win against the Orlando Magic. Also going to talk about the possible scheduling changes that Woj and Zach Lowe have been passing along these last few days. It took me a few days to dive in. Been knee-deep with Lions, but short week there for the team from Allen Park. But some possible changes coming around the league. We'll detail those bullet point for you a little bit down the road on this episode. But the Pistons get the win, 103-88, against the depleted Orlando Magic on Monday night at home at Little Caesars Arena. Without Aaron Gordon, without Nikola Vucevic, does not matter. Pistons get the win. I'm happy about this. I was getting a little tired of being negative there. I don't want to talk bad about these guys. These players don't want to talk bad about the people on Twitter, the listeners, you guys. That isn't pleasant for me. I'd rather be joyous, rather celebrate with you guys. And it's not really a great feeling to have that type of show sometimes where you feel like you're ripping players or talking about people who say this and that on Twitter or even go back and forth with some people on Twitter like we did on Monday. And it wasn't a bad discussion. I was talking to Cahill, I believe to say his last name. But and I listened to him and Joe's podcast, hashtag Pistons, on Monday. Those guys are, you know, the Andre Drummond defenders, it's a little bit of a crisis point. Not that the Andre Drummond's having a bad season. He's having a good season. But it's just that, you know, the impending big decision that the Pistons have to make. Those guys, it's kind of an unreasonable time for the people on either side of the Andre Drummond debate in terms of get rid of him or sign him to a huge deal right away. And there's just kind of extreme polar sides of that that I kind of consider myself to be in the middle of with like a lot of debates out there in Pistons land. But I'm just not, you know, that's not what I want to do. I don't want to be screaming about people or especially Detroit Pistons or coaches or front office or anything like that. It's just not the type of guy that I am. It's not the type of stuff I like to do. We'll do it if we have to, of course. We're not scared. Ain't scared here. But, you know, I made a decision here in year three with the show that you're going to get my unvarnished thoughts, my opinions. Sometimes you're not going to like them, and that's fine. But we're going to move on from my little monologue here. Pistons improved to 6-11 on the season. Best part of that record is 4-2 against red-letter teams. If they weren't so bad against good teams and bad teams, this team would be pretty good. So they're knocking out the most important wins, those wins against red-letter teams with those Indiana victories and now with Orlando on Monday night. One win on Monday night, and they are now in 10th place alone in the Eastern Conference. Jumped a whole bunch of crap teams, and they are now a half game out of the playoffs, a virtual tie between Orlando and Washington for 8th, and the Pistons just a half game behind them. holy crap, Eastern Conference. It's amazing. It's amazing to me looking at the NBA standings right now, how quickly things have kind of settled in this league where the teams kind of find their level very quickly. Don't know if that's a great thing, but, you know, March Madness obviously is a win and go home, and that's maybe a little bit too extreme. But the NBA, it's just kind of like the haves and the have-nots. I mean, the top six teams in the Eastern Conference right now are teams that we can unequivocally say are definitely going to the playoffs at this point. I was wrong in saying that Miami's more of a fringe team. Seems like they're basically easily a playoff team. Same thing in the Western Conference. The top six teams in the Western Conference, they are definitely going to the playoffs. And, you know, maybe Dallas, if you're a non-believer in Luka keeping anything like this pace up, you could maybe make an argument that they fall off. Obviously, injuries notwithstanding with all these things I'm talking about. But, you know, those last couple spots in the East and the West are really the only ones that are going to be contended for at this point. And we are like 17 games in for teams out there. There's no team that's crazy surprising. Obviously, Golden State with their injuries, I wouldn't consider them that much of a surprise because of what's happened there over these last few weeks. But there's no team that's out of nowhere playing great. There's no team that sucks that was supposed to be really good other than, like I said, Golden State. But, man, it's just, you found your level, and that's where you're at. But speaking of where you're at, Luke Kennard, 20 points, 7 assists, a good game for him. Blake Griffin, 17-5, 13 points and 8 rebounds for Bruce Brown, 12 apiece for Langston Galloway, Christian Wood, and Svi Mykhailiuk, 4 for 8 from 3 for Svi, 4 for 11 from Langston Galloway, 5 assists also from him. Make that trade on December 15th at midnight. Get a draft pick for Langston Galloway. Do what you got to do. Use the asset. Do your thing, Ed Stefanski. Derrick Rose, a brutal game, 1 for 11 for him. Everyone's entitled to a bad one. Andre Drummond, you're not going to believe this, but he battled foul trouble throughout the night. 7-18 for him. Too good of a mood to dwell on that. Turnovers were down for the Pistons, only 13, so that's getting settled a little bit better. 4 for Bruce Brown, too much there. Blake and Andre, 3 apiece. I'm encouraged that the Pistons shot 14 of 38 from 3, 37%, and still got the win. It wasn't one of these unsustainable shooting nights. But what is sustainable and should be sustainable for Dwayne Casey and the Pistons was the defense. And obviously we'll touch about that next as we talk about the three biggest takeaways from me in this game with the Orlando Magic with the win for the Detroit Pistons. We're going to talk about that next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
Right, a little bit later on, we are going to talk about the proposed scheduling changes and what might be coming downhill for the NBA going forward. A big story in the league that I didn't dive into over the weekend, so I wanted to send along the bullet points to you guys, but I got three main takeaways from Monday night's win for the Detroit Pistons against the Orlando Magic. And the first one, I'm going to get a bruise on my back from patting myself on the back so hard. We're going to point out these stats until they're no longer relevant, and then maybe I'm proved wrong at some point. But I had a theory just from watching Christian Wood in the preseason. I called it out way back then, and I said, I think that this guy is going to be one of those guys that's really good at home and maybe not so good on the road. And so far, you know, only 6 home games that he's been in. He's had some DNPs, and I think the sample size is something like 8 or 9 on the road. But the averages, the counting stats tell the story. 10 points and 6 rebounds per game. Exactly those numbers, by the way. 10.0, 6.0. 10 and 6 at home and on the road, 7 and 3. So a big difference, you know, 3 points and 3 rebounds per game. Obviously, small sample sizes, and we'll see how this all plays out. But very comfortable shooting at Little Caesars Arena in front of the friendly crowd who obviously loves Christian Wood. We know how much Pistons Nation loves this guy because he's new, exciting, he's different, all those things. But a 60% three-point shooter at home, 6 of 10, obviously a comically small sample size there. But 60% three-point shooting, just keep that up at home, Christian Wood, and the fans will still keep going crazy for you. He's playing a little over a minute more, 15.6 to like 14.3 minutes per game at home as opposed to on the road. So not much different, but obviously a little bit of a contributor there to the counting stats. And the percentages kind of match up too. The efficiency for Christian Wood is pretty similar in terms of the strong numbers at home and the not-so-strong numbers on the road. I just feel like he's one of those emotional type of players, and I think that's kind of the rap on Christian Wood? Is it maybe a little bit of immaturity issues? And as we've talked about, I know that the Thon Maker and Christian Wood thing is the most played out conversation piece that we've had really since the season started, really since training camp started. But I do think that Dwayne Casey is doing something here. I do think, and I know that rightfully so, especially at home, Christian Wood's getting the minutes. Thon Maker is not. Thon Maker has to prove something, too. He's not a veteran who's proven his way in this league or anything like that. But, A, I think you need to still find out and make sure that you're sure that you have nothing in Thon Maker before letting him go for nothing this offseason. And not only that, but I think that Christian Wood, there's a little bit of a player development thing here. There's a little bit of a mentor relationship here with Dwayne Casey, who it's not just carving out a certain amount of minutes to play for certain guys every night. There's a lot of things that go into player development. It's not just the types of drills you're doing at practice with the player development coaches, the time you spend with the DJ Bakers of the world and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of things that go into it, and a lot of it is mental. A lot of it is harping on him for the defensive missed assignments, for the defensive missed rotations, for not handling people in the post as well as he should, for keeping guys off the glass, not just freelancing for rebounds, doing those kind of things that young players are going to do. And I think there's a little bit of a, with Christian Wood, maybe there's a little bit of an emotional aspect of it too, where you can't, you know, give a guy too much too soon, start believing in himself, and maybe fall into some of the old habits that may or may not have hurt him throughout his career. We're watching a guy who's very talented. Anyone can see that. Even me can see that Christian Wood is a very talented player, great around the rim, great hands, doing a lot of good work out there. But there's got to be reasons that a 24-year-old is available like he was on waivers. And I think Dwayne Casey is doing the job that he's being asked to do in terms of developing him and turning him into a professional. And not only that, but developing that relationship that might be a key reason for Christian Wood to come back or maybe sign kind of a medium-term deal and become a more permanent part of the Detroit Pistons if that's what they want. You know, maybe there's something to be said for a guy who's, you know, kind of offense first, maybe Dwayne Casey. If they can't develop that two-way game, maybe it's something that that you let walk away. And it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world there either. But I think that there's just some things going on, and I don't have inside knowledge of the relationship and the development of Christian Wood and the relationship with Dwayne Casey, but I just, this is what he's known for. He's obviously a guy that's well respected and well trusted by the Kyle Lowrys of the world, the DeMar DeRozans of the world, that can't say enough good things about this guy. And that leads me to believe that there are things behind the scenes that we may never know about that are reasons that Dwayne Casey is beloved by these kind of guys and can develop guys. And I know that no one wants to give you any credit in Raptors land to the player development, to Siakam and Van Vliet and Jakob Poeltl, making him a trade piece for Kawhi Leonard. All those good things that happened with the Norman Powells and DeLon Wrights of the world. I give Dwayne Casey some credit for that. And I know it sounds kind of funny, but taking a team to where they are 1 year away from winning the NBA championship is a thing in and of itself. And I know that Nick Nurse gets a lot of credit for that. Obviously Masai Ujiri, obviously Kawhi Leonard, but to have a team develop to the point where those guys can step up and make plays in the playoffs as bit players, as rotation guys, as secondary guys is obviously something that mattered to the Toronto Raptors. The principles of playing defense that Dwayne Casey taught them was something that paid off come the playoff run last June. That was a long takeaway from that one. So number two, we go in descending and ascending order. If you listen to the show, you know that I can't figure that out. But Svi Mykhailiuk for the 3 and D, not just the 3, but also the D. Mykhailiuk was a monster. 4 out of 8 from 3, that was all of his points. Tied his career high with 12 points there. Right now in the season, Svi Mykhailiuk is 17 of 35 from 3. Fun with sample sizes. Pretty good. 48.6% from 3. We'll take that. We like that. But Svi Mykhailiuk, the reason that he might continue to be in the rotation and continue to play for Dwayne Casey is not just the hoisting, but also the playing of the defense. We saw that throughout this game, particularly in an important play. Markelle Fultz goes right at Svi Mykhailiuk and draws the foul, and Dwayne Casey makes the challenge. I like the coach's challenge there, and I didn't think they were going to overturn that call. I thought that it was an offensive foul, and I thought that they made the correct call. But my history with professional sports says that sometimes what you think might happen and what's actually going to happen are two totally different things. So I think that's sometimes the coach's challenge can be kind of not only are you trying to change this one particular play, but as a coach, it's kind of like a mechanism to have your guys back. I got your back, bro. Svi, I don't know if this is going to get reversed, but we're going to challenge this. I'm going to reward you and make a big deal in front of the home crowd, do the finger wave in the air, and get that flipped around. And it ended up working. So good for them. Like I said, I don't know that coaches' challenges are going to make a huge difference in any single game this year, but these are the kind of things that might end up being the result of it. That, like, hey, I like that kind of play. I'm going to show my satisfaction for you by waving the finger and giving you the satisfaction that we think we got your back. We're going to try to get this moved around. Svi, I don't know. You know, he struggled. He had a little shy trigger finger a little bit so far this year. There's a lot going on in Ukraine right now. Probably been on his mind. He's probably watching the impeachment hearings all day. Kidding there. But got a lot of respect for my Eastern European brethren coming over from the Ukraine. The all-time leader in three-pointers made from Kansas. They've had some good basketball players come out of there. They invented the damn game. Or James Naismith did before he was at Kansas, but they developed basketball in a lot of ways. And Svi, basically Jesus of basketball at this point, because you know he's the son of God of Kansas. I don't know where I'm going there, but some tough dudes from Europe, and we'll move on from there. How about that defense? The number one takeaway by far, no doubt about it. You know, speaking of defense, I didn't talk about this at the top, but we talked about Jonathan Isaac. Man. I know that we don't watch a lot of Orlando Magic basketball, but John Isaac is a defensive stud. That dude is everywhere. And as a guy that who values defense, I was salivating on that all night long. Obviously, he's got big strides to make offensively. The plus-minus is down because of that. But the Pistons did work. Not quite Jonathan Isaac type of level work as an individual, but the Pistons allowed 33 points in the second half. Again, let's take a look at this lineup and the injuries. We got Isaac, Owundu, Birch, Kem Birch, Markel Fultz, and Evan Fournier is the starting lineup. That's poor. You got El-Farouq Aminu, Mo Bamba, another offensive liability, DJ Augustine, you know, Terrence Ross, who I think I called Jeremy Ross the other day, but Terrence Ross, not the Michigan football player, you know, stepped up, made some shots. He's like their most talented offensive player available in addition to Evan Fournier, but not good for that team. But you know, more credit to the Pistons. Third straight game where they've held their opponent way under their scoring average for the season. And Orlando was 8 of 25 from 3, 32%. So it wasn't just like, you know, completely off the mark from three-point land. You know, you see a team has a poor offensive output. That's kind of your first guess when the team struggles to score. Oh, they must have been shooting cold from three, missing some open shots. But 32%, it's not good. But it's not like that's the one explainable reason for why the Pistons held them like they did. Again, Orlando, maybe the worst offensive team in the league, especially with Vucevic and Gordon. They certainly are. But after that tough stretch of no Blake, no Rose, and everything else that's going on with the Pistons, I'm not going to apologize for injuries that other teams are dealing with. And that's the biggest takeaway. Let's see if that defense can keep rolling on with some easy games coming up. We know this four-game stretch coming up here, but it continues Wednesday at Charlotte, Friday back in LCA for Charlotte again after that. Sunday afternoon, you got the Spurs in town, and then Tuesday in Cleveland. Winnable games all over the place. But Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. Are you listening to this on the go? If you can't visit Audible right now, you can find this and all other offers for your Christmas shopping from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcasts.com/offers. All the good stuff is there for you to check out. Coming up next, going to run down the possible changes coming to the NBA and what you need to know about them now. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. All right, you've seen Adrian Wojnarowski and Zach Lowe tweeting about it, and you didn't dive in yet. You're like me. You paid too much attention to the NFL and the Lions over the weekend and the college football programs and the high school football game that you were at covering for the Detroit News on Saturday. I know you're just like me. But you dove in on Monday, and I want to give you the details of ESPN.com reporting about what the major changes that might be coming to the NBA schedule and structure. Some pretty cool things that we've heard talked about for some time, but starting to get some real action and traction in the discussions between the National Basketball Association and the players. Association. They've got to come to an agreement on all this stuff. It sounds like it's going to all come to a head in April when it gets voted on. Obviously, some details might be changed and wrinkled out before that time. And just so you know, these changes will not happen next season. They will be the season after that. If they come into fruition, that is the league's 75th anniversary. We know the league is really big on those anniversaries that we've talked about with the uniform situation for the Pistons, but for throwbacks. But here it is, possibly reseeding the conference finals, a 30-team in-season tournament for an additional championship, postseason play-in as well, a tournament there, and shortening the regular season to 78 or 79 games because of all this stuff. So, interesting stuff. Let's talk first about reseeding the conference finals. Pretty simple there. You take whatever teams are in the conference finals, you take the regular season records, and you might have two, the West Eastern Conference team play the West in the conference finals and vice versa again. So you might have the NBA finals occurring between two teams in the East or two teams in the West. I think more likely two teams in the West. But obviously the huge imbalance of teams that throughout the years in the Western Conference being the stronger conference all this time, and the NBA Finals not being between the two best teams. You get LeBron's Cavs sneak in there and get hammered by the Warriors. The NBA kind of wants to put an end to that, if at all possible. Don't see a big problem with that myself. Even a traditionalist like myself can deal with that. But this one I'm not sure about. The postseason play-in game, you're just going to helicopter in a championship that no one at this point cares about because it doesn't exist. But what you got is the NBA has their six divisions, as we know. But in that framework, you have pre-scheduled games as part of your regular schedule that are also serving as pool play qualifier matchups into a tournament. So of those six divisions, the top six teams that win the pool play qualify for an eight-team single elimination tournament with two wildcard spots added based on how you finish in those pool play games. And you get in and play quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals of an eight-team in-season tournament after Thanksgiving, wrapping up in mid-December. So it's kind of a challenge cup, you know, kind of a European soccer model of not just the singular championship at the end of the season that you're going for. Adding some cups, and obviously it's big questions about there. Why would we care right away? Why would as fans, as players, as coaches, they're just going to jump in and start caring about this? Obviously, there'll be a financial incentive, you know, winner-take-all type of stuff, advance, and the players and coaches get more money. That's one way to make people care. And I'm not sure that fans are going to care. Probably eventually, that's kind of the bet they're making. But early on, I could definitely see a Greg Popovich type just kind of poo-pooing this thing early, sitting guys in the tournament, or maybe tanking a game during pool play to make sure you don't make the tournament so you can rest instead of play a little bit of long game action there. But I'm into it. Changes are good. Sometimes I fear change, but we'll do a little changing and see how this goes. Could be kind of fun and maybe get a champion crowned in December as opposed to in addition to what happens in June for the NBA. But the play-in tournament is the one idea I like the best. Two separate tournaments that are happening in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference involving the 7 through 10 seeds. So you qualify for it with weighted advantages for those higher seeds there. So what it would be, according to the report from Zach Lowe and Adrian Wojnarowski, the 7th and the 8th seed play each other in one game, with the winner moving on and becoming the actual 7th seed in the playoffs and playing the first round series against the 2nd seed. The loser, meanwhile, during this, the 9th and 10th seeds are playing each other, winner take all, and the winner of that game moves on to play the loser of the 7-8 game. So if you're the 7-8 seed, you get two opportunities to win one game to actually qualify for the playoffs. And if you're the 9 or 10 seed, you got to win two games to get in the playoffs. So built-in advantages, I like that it's not just a random 7 versus 10, 8 versus 9 winner take all. So 7 versus 8 loser plays the 9 versus 10 winner, and the winner of that game gets in as the 8th seed. You obviously have a little bit of the baseball wild card situation there where sometimes you get a little momentum from those wild card wins, and it might actually help you in the first round of the playoffs as opposed to teams that are stagnating a little bit, maybe having a few days off in between the regular season and the NBA playoffs. Obviously adds a little bit of a wrinkle, drama, to the first round of the playoffs, which I am fine with. I want more drama in the first round. These first rounds sometimes are lopsided, as we know here in Pistons land, a little haves versus have-nots. blowouts and no real upsets in the first round. So I'd be into it. I'd also be into shortening it to 3 out of 5 in the first round, making a little bit more variance there as well. But so that's what the ideas are. What do you guys think? Get in touch with me. 810-666-1546. Leave your name, leave where you're from, and let me know what you think about these changes. If you think that you're into it, if you think the Challenge Cup idea is stupid and you'll never be into it, let us know what you think here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook. Sam, thanks for listening, everyone. Hey, we got a victory. Keep your chests puffed up high, head held high, and you're a Pistons fan. You can be proud for one day today on Tuesday. We'll talk Charlotte Hornets, look ahead to Thanksgiving weekend, and like I said, planning on a Black Friday episode at some point, but no promises as to when that will go up. I know you'll be shopping all night anyways, but episode Wednesday morning, just like usual, and then sometime over the weekend we'll drop in and finish off November strong here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Spread the word for me. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.